Blog Talk Radio.
Hello and welcome to the premiere episode of Indie Streak. I am Rachel Galvin, and you may have heard of some of my other shows that I've had in the past, such as Let's Talk Fashion. Well, my new show is Basics of the Biz, which is on every Wednesday or Thursday, however you look at it. I think the next episode is January 5th at 1 o'clock in the morning, so you can always tune into that as well. That show is about tips for actors, kind of tools of the trade. This show is about interviewing people in the biz, producers, writers, directors, etc. Well, today I'm going to be talking about a movie called Walk a Mile in My Pradas, and I have the opportunity to interview the writer of the show, who's also the producer, Rick Caritas, and I hope I pronounced that properly, but I'm going to see if I can get him on the line right now. Okay, Rick, are you there?
I am here. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you.
Cool.
Great. Now, let me make sure I pronounce your name right. Is it Caritas?
That's very good, yes. Actually, the Caritas, but there's no H at the end, so you actually pronounced it perfectly the way it's written, you know, better than most would, so yeah. And my legal first name actually is Sudi, S-U-D-I, so in case my parents are listening, you know, I have to throw that in.
Okay, but you prefer Rick. Okay, gotcha.
That's fine, yeah.
Okay, well, I want to talk a little bit about your movie, Walk a Mile in My Pradas, and let me tell the audience a little bit about what the film is. Basically, it involves a homophobic man who meets a new homosexual coworker, and with the help of a little Christmas magic, they do a switcheroo, and the gay man becomes straight, and the straight man becomes gay, and it causes a lot of problems in their relationships. What made you come up with this idea in the first place? I know it took you 8 years to make this film.
It did, yeah, because I had the idea for it about 8-9 years ago in New York City. I lived there at the time. I'm now in California. But, you know, they've done all these switching places movies, Rich and Poor, Young and Old, Mother, Daughter. And as far as I had known, they had never done, you know, a gay person, straight person switching. And instead of doing the switching bodies, I just did it. They just get their sexual orientation switched. And then to make it more fun, made the guy really homophobic. So, he's really uncomfortable being switched over to gay. And then we threw Christmas in, too, just to make it even more fun. And his wedding is coming up in 2 weeks. So it kind of, it took a lot of rewrites. And also I brought on Tom Archdeacon, who is actually one of the producers as well, and plays Steve in the movie, the one who's gay and turned straight. I made him a co-writer as well because he had helped a lot with a lot of the rewrites later on. So I owe a lot to him, too, with the writing as well.
Okay. And you have some great characters. It seems like every character is very developed. Are these people based on people you know in your life?
I don't think so. I think the main character was from someone I knew years and years ago. And I don't know if he's still that, you know, macho and homophobic. But, no, I don't think so. I think they're just the characters we created. I think the actors really brought a lot to them as well. Like Dr. Fist or Feist, you know, they accidentally call him that. Jason Stewart, he took that one scene and made it this great, you know, character. And I think a lot of the actors did that. We tried to find good actors that would do that. So I don't think it's all based, you have to see on fictitious people, as far as I know.
Okay. And was there a lot of improv that went on, or did they stick pretty much to your script?
Most of the actors stuck to the script, except Tom Arnold actually does a lot of improv, which again helped it out a lot. I think it made it a lot better, a lot more. He does a lot of improv, and he played the boss of these guys, and he did a great job. And he does a lot of improv, and but otherwise, I think most people stuck, you know, pretty close to the script. Yeah.
Now, how did you get Tom Arnold?
We got Tom Arnold. It's funny because most of the characters we put a breakdown through, but we had him in mind for the boss. We thought he would be good. So we contacted his agent and manager and lawyer, which is a big, long process. Now we know why. We did the casting ourselves for the movie, and now we know why casting directors get paid so much, because there's a lot of work involved. And basically we, you know, got him the script, and he actually had an interest in the subject matter of the script, Tom Arnold, because his brother is gay, and they helped fight for gay marriage rights in Iowa. So, it wasn't just for him just about doing a project, getting money or whatever. He had an interest in the film subject matter. So, and he was great, too. He really did a great job.
Yeah, he did. It was really funny.
Yeah.
How would you suggest someone go about getting, if someone wants kind of more of an A-list person or someone that, you know, is well-known, what is the best approach for an, you know, a producer to get someone like that on board?
Well, again, I think you probably need a good casting director that has access to them. Sometimes, like I said, we had a low budget, so we tried to do had to do everything ourselves. But we put a breakdown out for like Dee Wallace and Mike Starr. We put a breakdown out for the parents of Tony, and so they were one of the people that responded, and that's who we picked. And they did a great job as well, and were wonderful. And Bruce Valanche, we kind of does a cameo. He was great too, and
Bruce as well.
Yeah, I knew somebody knew him, and he was great. He was very down to earth, really nice, and he really liked the project and just kind of came on board. But, you know, you can put a breakdown out for them. A lot of times you have to go through the agent or the manager, and it's hard to do that unless you have everything in place and all the money. And my suggestion would be if you have a way of getting that script directly to that actor, you know, from someone that knows them, that's, again, probably not the most, I don't know, maybe professional way, but sometimes it... If they like the script, then you can get the money for it, or then, you know, the agent will, you know, you're going to deal with the agent and manager later anyway, but not to put down agents and managers, but just sometimes, you know, they make it more difficult than it needs to be to get, you know, some actors really want to do a project and they never even hear about it, but, you know.
It's kind of a middleman.
Yeah, and again, usually, no, they're great for, you know, like I said, a lot of times, if you have a bigger budget and stuff and you can really... You know, and that's what's so hard with getting the A-list actors is it brings your cost up a lot, but it can bring in more money once it gets released. And I also want to bring up Nathaniel Marston, who played our lead actor, Tony, was great. He was on One Life to Live for many years, and three different people I knew who didn't know each other who had read my script said, you have to get this guy for the lead. He'd be perfect in it. And I actually had met him once or twice on One Life to Live because I had done some under 5 years ago, and I had gotten him the script, and he said, yeah, when it gets to go, let me know, and I'd love to do it. And he did a great job, so I owe a lot to him as well.
Great. And I know I met you at the Fort Lauderdale International Film Festival here in Fort Lauderdale. Where else has the film been shown in the film festival circuit?
It was in Hoboken Film Festival back in June. Actually, won a couple of awards, one for Best Supporting Actor for Tom Archdeacon, and won Best Trailer, and we were up for Best Screenplay. We didn't win that, but it's kind of cool to be nominated for a Best Screenplay. It was also, let's see, in Rhode Island Film Festival, Louisville, Kentucky Film Festival, in New York's Hell's Kitchen, their first film festival ever we showed at. So, yeah, I've been all over the place this year. I've done my traveling for the next 10 years, I think. And we're coming up, actually, in the Idlewild Film Festival in California on January 12th, I believe. So that's kind of cool.
Oh, great.
Yeah.
Okay, so you have other festivals coming up this year, probably.
That's probably the last. That will probably be the last one, I think.
What's
available.
The next step?
Well, it's available now on VOD, like certain cable outlets have it. You know, people would have to check. Some of them have, some of them don't. So it's video on demand. It's also on DVD on Amazon through Osiris Entertainment. They're our distributor, and Family Video carries it. And actually, on the website, it says all the places I think you can get it, which is, can I plug the website? Or?
Oh, yeah, go ahead.
It's www.walkamilemovie.com. And so I think it'll tell where they can get that kind of stuff. So.
Okay. And, and you have another project coming up as well, don't you?
I do. I have. It's funny because it took me 8 years to get this movie made, and I kept writing and, you know, other screenplays. And I have one called... Charlie's Dream, which I'm going to shoot in Nashville, Tennessee, hopefully by July or August. But we actually have Stella Parton is going to help produce. She's Ali's sister, but she's a great singer-songwriter herself. And she's so nice. I met her down in Nashville, and she liked the idea of the story. And so we'll be working with her. I'm very excited about that. And she actually has a book out, which is kind of Tell It, Sister, Tell It, which is really good. So I try and help her out because she's so nice, so I'll plug that while I'm here as well. But that'll have an original country music soundtrack, and it should be a lot of fun. I'm looking forward to that one as well.
Do you have a director for that project already as well?
No, we're looking, actually. We have a few people in mind, and so we're just getting all that stuff started, you know.
I know with Walk a Mile and My Prada, you had Joey Sylvester.
Yes.
How did you go about getting him?
Joey I'd known for a while, and this actually was his first feature film. He had directed some shorts and He'd won one or two awards, and he was, you know, he directed people like Sally Kirkland and stuff. And so that's kind of how, you know, I'd known him already. It's not like we found him, so, and brought him on. And himself and Tom Arstekin and myself and the editor, who was amazing, Jeffrey Reed, I have to say, because he went above and beyond. Again, it was a low-budget film, so everyone worked really, really hard, but he really helped. The editor is so important, and we all four of us spent many nights working until 4 in the morning, you know, helping the editing, all that stuff, and then we all had to work in the morning. And so, yeah, Joey and everyone, Tom, worked really hard. Of course, the crew.
I know you also were in Guacamole My Pradas as well. You also were cast in it.
Yeah, I played Brian, who, you know, it's a medium-sized role, I guess. So it's a fun role, too, yeah. So that was kind of...
you've done a little bit of acting in the past as well, right?
Yes, yes. I mean, I consider myself a little more of a writer, but I love acting, too. And it was great because I got to act with Nathaniel Washington as Tony in the film, and also Lindsay Hollister, who played Laura, who chases me throughout the movie and did a great job.
Mm-hmm.
And that was fun. Yeah.
Now, what's your process as an actor to prepare for a role? Was it easier because you wrote it yourself, I'm assuming, to know that character?
I think it was. And I picked a character that I felt I could maybe relate to and that it wouldn't be too hard or too easy. Like, in other words, I was writing and producing the film, so I didn't want to – I'm not like Clint Eastwood where I can write, direct, and be in the movie. Mm-hmm. You know, I wanted to keep it where it wasn't, you know, I didn't go crazy, you know, trying to – so I think it was the perfect role as far as – something I was comfortable with, and, you know, it wasn't, so to prepare for this role was pretty easy. And, you know, I don't have to be the star in my own movie, but it's nice to have a small part. Even in The Charlie's Dream, I'll probably play the doctor in a couple scenes, you know.
Okay. And what about writing? What is your process for writing? Do you kind of come up with an outline, like the plot first or the characters first or stream of consciousness? Like, how is your writing process?
I'm probably a little more stream of consciousness. Then I kind of go back and organize more. I usually just think of the idea of the film, maybe a title of what it's about, like a, you know, and then take it from there and then develop, you know, the characters and stuff. I don't really do the index card thing or the, even at first, and I just kind of start writing and see kind of where it goes. Then I kind of go back, you know, because you have to have certain structural things and that kind of stuff. And I thank God for Final Draft, because when I first started writing this film, I didn't know anything about it. And so that's the software that, you know, just kind of organizes it and helps to write it. And, but yeah, I get ideas all over the place. In fact, I co-wrote a film called Rise that may shoot in New York later next year as well, or this year. Mm-hmm. It's actually next year already, isn't it? And that's called Rise, and that came out of a dream I had early in the morning, and I was telling them about it. So that's a great movie. Let's write it. So we did. So, but yeah, I read a lot of when I first brought this project to California. I took a writing workshop, and a lot of the story developed from that as well. And other actors read, and writers, you know, made suggestions, and so that was kind of very helpful. And then I try and read a lot of other screenplays as well. Helps.
Okay. What do you think was the most challenging part of doing this film overall?
Well, again, I think probably any project is getting the money for it, probably. Mm-hmm. I'm guessing for us that was one of the reasons it took so long. We were going to do a much bigger budget, and then we finally, you know, brought it down, and that changed the story a little, but, you know, kind of made it better because it makes you think more. And our executive producers who came on board, really, that's finally when we got to, we had Richard Lutz and Emrys Cooper, Brian Arnott, and Kirsten Lee were our executive producers, and they obviously helped, you know, invested in the film, and that's really what got it made. But that was the hardest, especially in this economy the last few years. That was because once you have the money, then you get the good people and the crew and the talent and all that. So, and I wish I could tell people exactly how you go about doing that, because it's just so hard. And like I said, I'm hoping for the next one it'll be easier, and I think it will be, because at least we did this one and this came out pretty good, we hope. And but that was one of the hardest things. And I guess the other thing is getting an A-list person, you know, it's like the Catch-22 thing. you don't get that person until you have all the money, and a lot of times you don't get the money until you have that person, you know, signed on.
Right.
I think that was
kind of get a promise that he's going to do it type of thing ahead of time.
Right. I mean, yeah, like a letter of intent, I guess. And,
right,
exactly. Yeah. And again, we shot the film in like 18 days, so that was a challenge as well.
Wow.
You know.
Where was it shot? Just all around L.A.?
Well, all in L.A. And we did, again, the location scouting ourselves. We had some help. One of our co-producers, Vincent DePaul, he also helped with product placement and locations, and I did a lot of location scouting. But we were in, like, Los Feliz,
mm-hmm.
Van Nuys, North Hollywood, and Palos Verdes, which was the farthest away. It was like an hour and a half drive.
Mm-hmm.
And actually, our sister Betty, who was a wonderful actress named Bunny Levine, she's 81. She drove herself all the way down there and worked with us for like 10 hours and drove home. And, you know, I mean, I'm like, I think she's going to give Betty White a run for her money. But, yeah, but it was all in the Los Angeles area. And so that was a challenge, too, because so much filming goes on here that they're very strict on, you know, a lot of things. So that was
I can imagine the permitting and everything. It was just ridiculously
right.
difficult.
Yeah, yeah.
Now, how is it in Nashville for this next project? Have you been? Has it been pretty easy to work with the city there?
Well, I haven't gotten too far with that yet. We're just in the starting
mm-hmm.
process, and I know Stella lives down there, so she's actually has a lot of locations we can use and stuff. I don't think anywhere is as bad as probably LA and New York, just because they do so much filming. Whereas if you go to another state where they don't do as much, they're so happy to have people filming there, and you know. They work with you more, I think. So I think it'll be a lot easier with that.
Are you filming in Nashville just because of her, or because of the ambiance of Nashville?
Well, the story takes place in Nashville mostly. It's
okay.
It's about a guy who he thinks he's dying, and he gets misdiagnosed, and he had always wanted to be a country singer and never did it and regretted it, and he figures he has a few years left. Gave it a shot, and you know, it turns out he was misdiagnosed anyway, but he doesn't know that. And so what happens from there? So it's about going after your dream, you know, way beyond, you know, he's like in his 40s and, you know, way beyond most people would, and it's never too late kind of thing. And it'll also have original country music, so that Nashville is a place to go to do all that. I actually happen
mm-hmm.
to love like Nashville and country music, so I'm looking forward to shooting that as well.
Yeah,
it's
I
very
love
different.
Nashville.
Yeah, it's very different from this script, obviously. It's just totally different.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Sort of the opposite almost, right?
Yeah. And
how do you go about getting the sound, by the way? You know, how do you pick your music?
Okay, that's a good question, too. And that can be a challenge, and that can be very expensive. But we were able to, our music composer was Andrew Marcus, and so he did the composing of the music. We actually all helped find music for the film from, like, Tantric is a group. We have a couple of their songs in it. They're a great, like, rock group. Karen Mason, who is a Broadway singer star, has a song or two in it. Mike McGlone has a song in it. We were able to get people that we knew to give us their songs, you know, without the huge licensing fees and things like that. So that helped a lot because that can cost a lot of money.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, we sifted through a lot of songs and stuff to find ones, and I think we finally. And got some good stuff in there. But that was really hard. That was a big challenge, too, now that you bring that up.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And in the Charlie's Dream one, I have some original songs I've written that will be in there, and then some others from maybe some Nashville writers, and, you know.
Now, Welcome All My Prodas has such an important message, and the message is very clear. Why do you think that it's so important at this time to get that type of message across about tolerance?
Well, it's funny because when I first started writing it, nine years ago, and I was taking so long to get it made, I said, my God, by the time I get it made, it's just going to be not an issue. You know, like people are going to be, so what? And then you know, 2-3 years ago, the whole, marriage acts and the Prop 8 in
mm-hmm.
California. And then, you know, still the politicians are going on about, also the military ban. I'm like, I was surprised that came off like last year, you know. But.
Mm-hmm.
Part of me thought by the time I get this made, it's going to be such a non-issue, but it still is a big issue. It's, you know, it's politicians, you know, still it's a big deal if someone's gay and stuff. And even getting this film made, you know, we were going to try and get a big production, you know, this really could have been, I think, a big, you know, feature film in theaters and a big, and they were still afraid to touch it a few years ago. Even after Brokeback Mountain and that, they still kind of were weary of it. So we just went ahead and did it ourselves. But I think it's more, and again, that's part of the point, is making it, you know, so it's kind of with comedy, kind of, you know, and again, Tony's a little bit cliche and a little bit, you know, some of it's a little stereotypical, but it helps get the point across, I think, and show kind of how old-fashioned Tony, this main character, is. And but yeah, hopefully people will get that out of it. You know, it's basically saying people are all the same, but we didn't want to be preachy. We wanted to do it with comedy, and so hopefully it came out that way. Yeah.
Give me your website again, just in case people missed it.
Sure. Yeah, it's www.walkamilemovie.com.
Okay, and you also have IMDb, and you have it all over the place.
Yeah, and IMDb will list all the cast. I wish I could say who everyone who's in, you know, because they all did such a great job. And off the top of my head, I'm trying to, you know. We introduced, like, some new people, like Chandler Lutz and Mark Behar, that had small roles in a film, you know, so that's kind of cool to get people their first break in it. And then we had very experienced actors and actresses, like Sammy Sheik and... just everyone really did a great job, I thought, in, you know, the different roles. We spent a lot of time really picking the cast, Tom and I, and trying to, again, I would never do it again. I would definitely hire a casting director because it's so much work, you know. But
yeah. Anything else, because we're running out of time already, else that you want to make sure you plug or anything like that?
No, well, I would say, first of all, thank you for having me on the show. I really appreciate it.
You're welcome.
That's really cool. It's a nice way to start off the year. And it's 10 a.m. in California. Now it isn't too bad because I didn't go out last night on New Year's Eve. So I'm pretty well rested. I think, you know, like I said, it's on VOD, cable outlets. We're trying to get on Netflix, so if people want to put that on their queue, they might add it, so I think you have to type it in and just add it, and it won't show that it's available. I think Walmart's in Canada, if you have anyone listening. That's at Walmart as well. And,
if you're in Idlewild, it'll be there. What day did you say?
Yeah, January 12th, and that's a little mountain area near Palm Springs, if anyone doesn't know. I've never been there. It's supposed to be very nice. And, that's actually on the 12th at 6 p.m. I'm sorry, the 14th at 6 p.m. It's the film festival starts on the 12th, which is a Thursday, but our showing is of Walk Among the Clouds is 6 p.m. on the 14th Idlewild Film Festival. So,
are you going to be there as well?
I will be there. Yes.
Okay, great.
Yeah.
So, anyone out there listening, go meet Rick at the Idlewild Film Festival, or check out his website, as he said. And this show, if you're listening to it live, is going to be archived, so you can listen to it again and again and get all that juicy detail. Also, as I mentioned earlier, I have another show called Basics of the Biz, which talks about acting tips, tools of the trade for actors specifically, and that next show will be Thursday, January 5th. For those that want to listen, tune into that, and that's archived as well. And I will be doing a review on Walk a Mile in My Pradas, which will be up on my website, which is independentstreak.ning.com, N-I-N-G.com. And look for that coming soon as well. But thank you, Rick, so much for tuning in today. And I know you have some fans out in Los Angeles that are listening in probably right now as well.
Hopefully, yep. Probably more in New York, because it's 1 o'clock in New York. It's a little later. They're more apt to be up.
Well, like I said, they can listen in to the archived as well, so let them know that
cool.
This is going to be archived and, put it out there and let everybody know.
Okay,
but,
thanks.
But thanks so much, Rick, and I may bring you back again to do another show
That'd
at
be
some
great.
Point.
Well, I look forward to it. Thank you so much.
Okay, thank you.
All right.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Okay, guys, so we're logging out right now from our show. Thank you. This is our premiere show, but I am going to be also having other filmmakers, directors, writers, maybe actors even, on the show, so you want to continue to tune in. I don't have a set time or date for the show right now because of everyone's schedules is different, so what I'm probably going to be doing is having shows kind of at random times, but I am going to be coming up with a new website that will be related to my Independent Streak website, and the shows will be listed on there. In the meantime, you can go right here on blogtalkradio.com/IndieStreak and see upcoming shows. So keep checking back for that, and it will have who I will be interviewing next. And I already have a list in my head of a whole bunch of people that are going to be on the show. It's going to be very exciting. I have other directors of independent projects. I have special effects people. Wait till you see who I have coming on board soon that I'm going to be interviewing. But I saw Rock a Mile of My Pradas last night, and I loved it, and I wanted to share it with you. So I brought Rick on board to speak with him, and you never know, I may have other people from the show that I interview as well. So like I said, keep tuning back into blogtalkradio.com/IndieStreak and find out who I'm interviewing next, and just keep listening in for more. But I want to thank you all for tuning in and say Happy New Year, Happy 2012, and I will speak with you guys soon. Thank you so much, and again, thank you, Rick Caritas, for coming on the show. Okay, bye, guys.